Hello there, and welcome to another episode of We Are Liverpool. It's the official LFC podcast where you'll hear from current and former players about their lives on and off the pitch with me, Peter McDowell, and Robbie Fowler. And today we've drafted in Robbie's best mate in the game, a player he formed a great partnership with on and off the pitch. Someone, incidentally, who in his pomp was England's most decorated footballing export. Here's a little taster of what to expect.
Shouldn't really be saying as well.
But don't say it.
I'll have to.
Is this going out on the telly? There was a pair of football boots on the side. They were Kenny's. And he said to me, you can have them. I was honoured to play for Liverpool. I thought we had a great team. They were the most enjoyable years that I ever played in. I needed to leave because I was that type of person. I wanted to play in the Champions League. I wanted to play against the best players in Europe. And I was getting older.
Yes, Steve McManaman is our guest today on We Are Liverpool. Before that, though, just a short message to tell you about our LFC Store app. It's available to download on Apple and Android now and gives you the chance to tap into exclusive discounts and offers on official LFC products. So here's what happened when Macca and Robbie were reunited. Steve McManaman's with us today. Iconic part of the mid-90s. Such a great time in everyone's life, wasn't it?
Brilliant.
Never mind the footy. and also, obviously, one of England's best ever exports in terms of a player going from England abroad. We'll talk about that a little bit later. More importantly, roommates, you two.
Yes.
Are we getting straight into the roommates?
Straight into the roommates one, yeah.
Yep.
Was he a good roommate, Macca?
He was an excellent roommate.
You're saying that so you don't come
back? No, I'm not actually.
No, I couldn't come back at him.
Because he was on the same wavelength as me. We used to stay up late. We used to try and sleep in a lot. So we weren't getting up at, you know, 6:30, 7:00. Mm. We'd wait until the longest we possibly could before we'd get up and go to breakfast. And then, you know, depending if you had a night game, try and sleep in the afternoon. So he was a really considerate roommate.
Shouldn't really be saying as well.
But don't say it then.
I'll have to. It's good.
Is this going on the telly? Then don't say it then.
You know when obviously you travel away and you obviously have your team meal, don't you? But I used to always look forward to getting room service as well. It was like standard that we got room service. We probably got it about 10:30 every Friday, didn't we?
And look forward to it.
It was a definite club sandwich.
I didn't do this, but
yeah, yes, you did.
No, I don't like club sandwiches.
Well, you know, in fact, you got toasted chicken.
The chicken was good for you, see that?
so was mine.
It was the special fries, right? That didn't do you any good. Chicken chow mein afterwards.
I mean, I'd love to say you're messing there.
No, you had various rituals, didn't you? But I mean, I used to know people who go to sleep at 9:30 and, you know, just after a couple of hours after their evening meal. You know, and I could never have gone to sleep at 9:30. I would, you know, just been lying there. So you have to be considerate for your roommate and have the television off or have it on low. As I said, it's not like now where you've got your earphones in and everybody can do their own thing. So I think back then it was great and it was funny. And we've got some memorable stories of other people rooming with people and Stevie Nichols and, you know, all the old players that you'd have, you know, a real good time telling stories with. But I think nowadays it's and of course the influx of a lot of players from outside of the UK as well. So I think it's far easier and better to room separately.
Macca, it's called We Are Liverpool.
Yes.
So what would that mean to you? What is your Liverpool?
Principally the city of Liverpool, my childhood, my parents. That's what would come to mind straight away. My early stuff before actually playing for the team, it would be my growing up, really. I had a lovely childhood. I was from Kirkdale. I went to St John's junior school, infant school, and that time in my brain, you know, they were really happy times. That's what had come spring to my mind instantly if you said, what does Liverpool mean to you?
It might have been Everton. It might have been Everton for both of you, but for Kenny Dalglish giving you a pair of boots.
Kenny Dalglish, Jim Aspinall, who was the local scout, he was the real person, but, you know, coming into a meeting where you're going to talk about your future and having Kenny there. I mean, it was the pair of boots at the end was the icing on the cake. Coming into a room as a 14-year-old and meeting Kenny, who, you know, that was 80, what would have been, I would have been 80, that would have been 1986. So that's when he was in his full pomp, wasn't it, 86. I'd just been to the cup final, Everton-Liverpool, with Everton, actually, because they wanted to sign me at that age. So I'd seen Everton lose. And then it must have been shortly after that I went to, I had a meeting with Jim Aspinall and my father, and then he brought me into a room and Kenny was there. And for Kenny to know so much about you. Listen, we know it's scripted, of course it is, but for him to know so much about you and your father and your sort of upbringing and who you play for and what position you play, and then he's talking about, you know, it'd be great if you could get into Liverpool's first team and do this and do that and do, you know, it's starry-eyed stuff.
Tell us about the boots then. How did they come in?
Oh, sorry. So there was a pair of football boots on the side.
But they weren't even yours, no?
No, they were Kenny's. And they were like these crazy, mad...
Gotta be Puma, sure.
They were special edition Puma that he'd wore. And they were like gold type, with like white on the back. And I just thought, wow. And he said to me, you can have them. I mean, they were miles too big for me. You know, I think when I was 14, I must have been like a size 4. And I think they were like a 7 or an 8. And he said, you can have them. And I just went, because, you know, they weren't Puma Kings, just the black with the white strap. You know, these were handmade, limited edition, especially for him, bits of gold on and all this nonsense. And I thought, oh, brilliant, I'm having them as well.
I mean, I feel hard done by, to be fair. I only got a lift off of me. You never gave me boots, did he?
But yet they were just on the side there, and he just said, take them. I just thought, brilliant.
Mm-hmm. What was that like? I mean, you were both, you know, both coming through the same experience, coming through that iconic Liverpool team, most flamboyant Liverpool team probably we'd ever seen. You two are youngsters kind of coming up behind it into a different era almost.
I think my obviously step into the squad was a little bit different than Macca's. It was because, whether he knows it or not, I knew him from when I was like under 11. So I was playing for Liverpool boys and he was playing for the under 14s.
That's when we first came into contact with each other. And when you were under 11s.
We went to Holland and I remember like seeing him and I was like, knew what he was, knew the type of player he was. And I was in awe of him, you know, that kid, because I knew how good of a player he was. And we probably had our first conversation when I was, you know, 11, 14, on the way to Holland on this bad crossing. And then when I got into the team, I mean, he was the first player I looked up to because I knew where he'd got to was what I was striving to become. So he was a player I was always going to you know, gravitate towards anyway. Thankfully, he took me under the wing.
You'd forged this unbelievable partnership with Ronnie Rosenthal as well, hadn't you, for the reserves?
Yeah.
Two strikers.
Yeah. It's funny how your career starts out, isn't it? I think when I made my debut, I played up front as well. Mm. I was in the squad a lot in the 89 season and things like that, but never got onto the pitch. So as a 17-year-old, I was with the first team a lot, travelling around with them, being 14th man. In case anyone gets sick in the hotel, you might get on the bench. Mm. It was only two subs at the time, so I was always there, but not getting changed, which was great. I experienced that travelling with them and, you know, staying in hotels. And if you didn't play on a Saturday, you just instantly played on the Wednesday in the reserves in the Central League, what it was at the time. So the Central League was a league full of, you know, the players who just didn't play. So it was incredibly strong. Yeah, and I played up front with, you know, Ronnie Rosenthal, and we had like Jimmy Magilton and Steve Staunton and things like that. So we won it that year, which was a huge thing for me. And me and him scored a load of goals between us, which was very strange. But yeah, it was incredibly enjoyable. You know, we'd go and play at the stadiums, you know, to big crowds, and you'd be up against Brian Robson if he's just coming back from an injury for Man United. So you were up against real experienced pros. So the learning of playing in that reserve league was brilliant. Mm. So when you jumped into the first team, you know, you were really ready for it, you know, because you'd been playing men's football for a long time and getting kicked by old experienced pros. So it wasn't a jump at all. It's a massive jump now from the 18s to the 21s to the first team, a massive jump.
You're back in the academy as a mentor, or, you know, do you want to describe what your role actually entails? Or?
Well, my role just comes in and I just try and help as much as I can. You know, I'm not coaching, so I wouldn't dare say I was coaching the kids. I wouldn't dare take any credit for anything I do coaching wise, but I'm there if the kids want to talk to me, if they need help with various problems they've got, if they want to know how to take people on, if they want to cross, I can watch them and analyse them straight away that they, within 5 minutes, that, you know, you need to kick with your left foot, you need to go left and right if you're gonna become a player. Just try and help them be better players. If I can help them by 1%, that's great, really. But you know what it's like. You can see a centre forward and after 5 minutes know what he does wrong and how you can instantly make him a better player if he listens to you and if he wants to learn. But that's all you can do. You can only tell them where they're going wrong, and you can only tell them how to be better and how to be a better player and how to put things correctly. And then it's up to them to go and implement it on the pitch or to work harder on the pitch. And some do and some don't. But that's all you can do. You're just part of the process of you have these kids for 2 years, you try and make him better, you try and make him better, you try and help him out if he's got problems. And then, they move on and you just hope that they get to the first team. You're always on the phone if they need a bit of help and things like that.
Yeah, you've said it there, though. Sometimes it's just someone phoning you, isn't it, and saying,
yeah, how are you? You're okay, yeah.
How's
if you need anything, give us a shout. Because people think that they're forgotten about when they've gone, and they're not. They're not, you know, and I think Alex Inglethorpe's great like that. People can contact him even if you've gone, left the club 3, 4, 5 years ago. I still speak to Ryan McLaughlin, people like that, you know. So you're always available if they ever need anything in the future. That's all you need to be.
You was Britain's most successful player abroad, playing with Galactico. How does that make you feel?
I mean, that's, you know what, Bob? It doesn't. I don't even think about it. Someone asked me about it the other day when you talk about your teammates, and because we're English, these foreign names, when I mention them, they're like huge names, and people think, oh my God, you know, But I said to somebody, it's like when I started my football career at Liverpool, and I was playing in the Championship winning team with Barnsley and Rushy and Ronnie Whelans and, Alan Hansen, Mark Lawrenson, to a certain extent, with that team. They were huge names abroad. So if you mention those names to a foreigner, they'd be like, wow, because Liverpool were winning European Cups and winning league after league after league. There's a lot of myth about the Galacticos and stuff. They were just a collection of 3 or 4 names. That's all it was. Whereas Raul and Roberto Carlos and Fernando Hierro, they weren't classed as the Galacticos, yet they were, you know, super brilliant, brilliant players.
Yeah, in all fairness, I'm not talking about Real Madrid. I'm talking about you as like an individual. We're talking about your upbringing and the fact that you go into Real Madrid and you're so comfortable. You stood out with them as well. So
yeah,
is that testament to your upbringing as well?
Yeah, probably.
Your dad or your Liverpool upbringing?
I think so. I knew that when I went, it was a difficult decision. I mean, you know, because we're very close, that my mother was very ill and had been for a long time. So when she passed, I mean, she passed the night before, the day after my... I played my last game at Anfield, as you know, and to leave my father was hard because, you know, my father just lost his wife, his wife for 30 years, and he left home, and he was very close to me, and he watched every single one of my games, so it was difficult for me to leave, but I knew that once I was going, and I did it with my mum's blessing, that I had to work hard at it. I couldn't do it half-cocked, really.
You're almost signed for Barcelona, didn't you?
I think that was in 96. It was at 3 years before. Mm. Was it? Again, I knew Barcelona were interested in me because they called me. I had, agents ring you up and say they put an offer in to Liverpool and Liverpool have accepted and they'll tell you. And Liverpool didn't tell me at all. And they told me, I think, the last day of the transfer window. If there was a transfer window then, they told me the day before that they did it, that they'd accepted an offer. And I wasn't particularly happy, you see. About that, not my football was fine. I didn't really want to leave, but the fact that he accepted an offer without me being consulted, I thought was, you know, the thing. Of things to come. They said yes to this a large sum of money without even talking to me, and I just thought, well, that says it all. Spoke to Barca. I felt it was never going to happen, to be honest, and then came back. I must admit, it wasn't my decision in the end. wasn't based on what happened 3 years before. It wasn't. It was happening on what was happening then. That's what it was. It had nothing to do with Liverpool. You know, I understood the business. I'm not that way inclined where I'd think, oh my God, it's a surprise. I wasn't happy with it, but I was cool with it in the end. You just got on with it, and then the following year was fine. I was still playing really good football. So it had nothing to do with my decision in the future. It didn't. I was honoured to play for Liverpool, so I never, ever, ever went for a new contract or moaned about money. I always waited for Liverpool to come and say to me, look, you're playing well, we want to give you a new contract. And that's when I would sit and talk with them.
So that never happened then?
Well, it happened, but it happened extremely late, which was the problem. You know, they said to me in September, we need to give you a new contract. And they said, okay. I said, okay. And they said, have you got an agent? I said, no. I said, it's just me. I said, you can get me any day of the week if you want. And they said, okay, we'll just need to get Peter Robinson. David Moores was the chairman and the manager. They said that in September, and I sat down with them in April. And it was just a bit like, well, you know, I'm around every day. I'm at the training grounds. There's no problem. And the season came, didn't it? And the end of the season came, and Evo was the manager. And then he got, you know, of course, we brought Gerrard in as joint manager, which undermined Roy Evans at the time. I thought it was terrible. So that was another thing that was nagging away at me, really. That was another thing. And of course, I hadn't played in the Champions League, Pete, which I wanted to do. I wanted to play in the Champions League. I wanted to play against the best players in Europe. Mm. You know, I'd played against the best players in Europe in 96 at the Euros and 98 at the World Cup. I wanted to test myself against the best because my football was good enough. It's just that when you're not winning or you're losing games, people consider you're not playing well, which is, of course, is ridiculous nowadays. So I wanted to test myself. So there was just a number of things all adding up and starting to fall into place. And I knew that we were still years away from getting to the Champions League spots. It's different now, of course. It's the first four places. But then I knew it was still going to take a while to get there. And I was getting older.
There's this peculiar thing about a pre-contract agreement as well, which is made public.
Yes.
How difficult did that make life for you, that fans knew that at the end of the season, he's going to join, from what our perception anyway, is the best club in the world, to go somewhere else. Yeah, and we've got to put up with him till then, you know?
It was difficult because it was so new at the time.
Yeah.
Now it's classed as quite normal now, isn't it? You know, to sign a pre-contract. You know, you run the risk of not signing a pre-contract and then getting a really bad injury. And then you're struggling, really. You have to stay or go, you know, because my contract would have been up and Liverpool could have easily just said, well, we don't want him now if he had a bad injury. So the pre-contract needed to happen to give you some security and stability. But again, I knew it wouldn't be easy. You know, you just try and manage it the best possible way. Gerrard knew, the chairman knew, they were well in it. And I said, look, let's organise a press day or whatever. Let's get the game out the way. Let's get a game out the way. And when it's quiet, I'm more than happy to speak to everybody about the situation. So I didn't want to make this sensationalist thing. But, you know, as you said, unfortunately, when it's a person against a club, that, you know, the club always wins, which is right, and which was cool for me. I expected everything. When I played with Liverpool, I lived in Kirkdale, I lived in Walton, and then I moved out to Crosby when my mum wasn't too well. So I was always in and around the city, and, you know, I very rarely got a bad word. If anything, people were very proud of me. You know, people couldn't believe I was from Kirkdale and I'd moved out like him. People couldn't believe that you were born where you were born with the hardships that you had, and you made it to where you made it.
There's a lot to unpack there, Macca, as well, though, isn't there? The stuff that you've explained, but, you know, the fact that you were a young lad that was losing his mum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, devastating. You know, your dad was still at home as well. Yeah. There's a lot that you have to deal with as a top level athlete there.
Yeah, there is, yeah. There was a lot because I was, you know, I'm not saying I was the boss of the house. I wouldn't say that by far. But, you know, when my mum was ill, my dad had to, you know, look after her. You know, I had a 17-year-old younger brother, actually, when she passed. So, you know, she was ill for a while fighting this disease and sort of went into remission, so that was good, but then came back and was fighting it. So it was, you know, this was a battle that went on for years and years. It wasn't just, you know, a day that she passed. She was ill for a long time, so it was very, very hard. It's very hard, you know, looking after your brother, and my sister was 18 months older than me, so she looked after us all as well. But, you know, it is hard to think about it, and then train and play on a Saturday and, you know, try and do well and, you know, take all that with you. And then leave as well. I was leaving, so I had to take all that baggage on, and all the people, you know, having misconceptions about you and thinking bad about you, of course, because you're leaving, and the newspapers writing bad things about you because you're leaving. But that's just unfortunately or fortunately, that's just the business we're in. You play bad and you're the star man in a good team, you know, it's your fault, which is absolutely no problem to me. And of course, the added thing of then you are leaving. If you lost, it was because I was leaving. It wasn't because of A, B or C. Yeah. It was because he doesn't care. You know, they lost the game today. He never ran around. It's because he's leaving, you know, which of course is complete gobbledygook. So in the end, it was, with everything going on, it was something that I needed to do, something that I had to do. You are a commodity in the end. And I didn't think like that back then. I don't want it to be that way. It was just, I'd been at the club since I was 40 and I left when I was 27, and I needed a challenge. And with everything that was going on around me, the challenge at the age of 27 with what was going on in my surroundings and what was happening at the club, I could have easily stayed at the club. It wasn't a case of, you know, I'm definitely going to leave. It's just that things materialised in that last 18 months, which edged me towards leaving. And then something else happened, like, you know, Gerrard coming in. I mean, I've got no problem against Gerrard. I really got on well with Gerrard. I just thought the way it was handled, and he was brought in as a joint manager when we were looking for a coach, I just thought it was handled awfully towards Evo. I was very loyal to Roy Evans because he was my manager. And I'd known him all since I started Liverpool. And I think what they did to him was awful, because when we won a game, it was Gerrard's. When we lost a game, it was Roy. And it was, I just thought it was awful, the situation he was putting in. So that was another thing that I didn't like. And then, of course, Roy left the club, I think it was October or November. And that was another thing. And it was just like, you know, it's just not the same as, you know, it's just not the same as it was. And I knew Gerrard wanted to implement his own things and implement his own training and bring his own team, and rightly so. And I just thought, it is probably better for me to leave. It probably is. And I had a really good discussion with Gerrard in like September and stuff. And he said to me, if you are going to leave, which I've got no problem with, you know, I'm a foreign coach who's coming to Liverpool. He said, so I've got no problem with you wanting to leave and play abroad. You know, I admire it, et cetera, et cetera. He said, just let me know as soon as I can so I can line up a replacement. And I said, Gerrard, I will. So I told Gerrard way in advance of everybody else knowing. Of course, so he could, I think he brought Vladdy in, I think, as my replacement, which, of course, brilliant, scored in the Champions League final himself. I love him to bits. So that was also, I had a really great relationship with Gerrard, but I just knew that it was going to be a number of years before Gerrard got it right. And I was always chasing time, always, to try and get into the Champions League spot. I just thought, this is it. This is where, you know, every road has led to this point now where I really should go now and try different things.
Just a quick break in play to let you know that if you've been enjoying We Are Liverpool, every episode is available to watch 24 hours before the podcast drops. Sign up to the Academy tier of our YouTube membership and you'll get to watch our next episode before anybody else. Alternatively, you can register to LFC TV Go for free and still get early access. Head to liverpoolfc.com/video for more information. Now, let's get back to the show.
He's also responsible for the fact that you won the league with Real Madrid as well.
Yes, first time I've ever won the league, yeah, for a professional club, though. I've got to get that one in. So, I mean, how that story came about was, obviously, Macca had been at Real Madrid for, you know, I think four or five years, and I'd never seen him play just because the simple fact is, you know, I was playing myself. So, obviously, their season finished a little bit later than where I was on holiday. I was with my cousin Paul, who's a painter and decorator, and Macca's phone was up, come last game, you know, if we win it, you know, we'll win the league. So we flew up from Portugal up to Madrid. We go to the game. I think, was it Real Sociedad or?
They won Sociedad the game. Or Bilbao, yeah. I can't remember.
Bilbao, it was Bilbao.
Okay, Bilbao.
Yeah, so they won the game 3-1. He comes in the players' lounge afterwards and threw two T-shirts, to myself and my painter and decorator cousin. And we put it on. What are we doing here? Like, come on, we're doing a tour of the city. And it was brilliant. So I get on a bus, and you mentioned before about the players in his group, the likes of Carlos, Zidane, you know, Figo, there was Raul. And I'm getting on the bus thinking, bloody hell's this? And we get on, we do a tour. So we get to the fountain in the middle of Madrid. I don't know what the fountain's called. I'm not even attempting to say it in case I get it wrong. And as far as you could see, there was people. So this is close to midnight, and there was hundreds of thousands of people. So what happens then is all the players get off the bus and they go and dance about in the fountain.
Go around the fountain, yeah.
And I'm thinking, I know it's the first time I've won the league. I mean, it might really take the Michael if they get off and start
dancing in the water.
Dancing in the water. I said, I'll just have a little bit of a, I'll calm myself down. So when they all get off the bus and I'm sat there, just me and my cousin, and the bus is quiet. And next minute, there must have been about 20, 30, 40 scouters, and they've seen me. And they all started singing. There's only one Robbie Fowler, and I've gone. It was the first time I was embarrassed then. You know, when he all gets back on the bus, and we went to a nightclub.
Nightclub, and all that, yeah.
And that was incredible. One of my recollections of that night was we were in the nightclub, and they just won the league. And the real Ronaldo comes up to me, and he's got like a glass.
The real Ronaldo.
the proper one. So he hands me, well, I think he gave me a glass. So I just took the glass up and downed it in one. He went, no, cheers. So, well, yeah, no, it's all good. Then we went back to his house, didn't we? And he was smoke machines and flashing lights, playing pool, helping ourselves a pint on his optics. I mean, it was an unbelievable night. Mm. I mean, quite rightly, I was ready to celebrate because, you know, it was the first time I'd won the league. Yeah.
Nice to be able to
share. It was made up for. It was a very proud moment for me.
I'm still waiting for my medal. I think I left a medal in your house in Madrid.
Oh, yeah, I think it was, yeah. I think it was.
To go to Real Madrid is brilliant, but, you know, to go there and have the impact that you had, the couple of Champions Leagues, the goal in the final as well, to have achieved all of that when you look back. And I know you don't look back at games and don't look back at moments too much, but you must occasionally think, what an achievement that was for a young lad from Kirk there.
A lot of the time, it just dictates how you're remembered, isn't it, as a player? The fact that you win stuff, whether that's right or wrong is another thing, but, you know, people have always focused on, oh, you won this or you won that or you won this or you won that, you know, whereas, you know, you see, let's see, for instance, you talk about Harry Kane, oh, you know, might stay at Tottenham and never win something. You know, he's going to break every record going, isn't he? He's just broke Jimmy Greaves. He can be, he'll beat Shearer if he's, even if he stays at Tottenham. But this clamour for him to, oh, he has to go to win something. So when you do win things, you know, people focus on it a lot. You know, that's what sort of you're defined by later on in life. So the fact that you can go and be successful, you know, was great. You know, I was successful at Liverpool, but people always want you to win. You know, oh, you never won the league, though, did you? And there's always something that you never win that people remind you of. So it's always about winning things all the time, all the time. So to win stuff or to add to the stuff that I won at Liverpool, to win more stuff, you know, is great, because that's what we're in it for. We're in it for winning stuff, aren't you? When you're a kid, you want to represent your country. You want to play at Wembley, firstly. You want to represent your country. You want to lift trophies. That's all I ever thought about.
Did you see yourself coming out more the bigger the game? Did you feel you played better? Or because I'm talking about, I talk about Liverpool, so the 92 FA Cup final, you talk the 95 League Cup final, the Champions League with Real Madrid, the semi-final in the Nou Camp. So all them big games, are you starred?
Yeah. No, I didn't actually. I didn't think I'd play better in big games. I was probably just fortunate, the fact that I scored goals and I played well on those occasions. I was always ready to play. I was never a goal scorer. You know, you were a goal. But to score in finals and semi-finals and quarter-finals, I did that a lot for some strange reason. So I don't know whether it was just fortune, but it wasn't. You know, of course I wanted to score goals in these games, but you just put yourself in the positions at the time where you just hope that you can score. I probably missed chances in other games. But that's all you can do. You know, and to be man of the match in these finals, that's, again, before the game, you want to win the game. That's all. Primarily, I wanted to win the game. And then afterwards, if you can dictate the game and shape the way the game goes and shape a victory and score goals in the meantime, brilliant. And if you can be man of the match, incredible. So, yeah, I was fortunate to be man of the match in a lot of finals, really, and score goals.
You know, before you were talking about pressures in, you know, playing for Liverpool. So, you know, you go and play for the Galacticos, you play for Real Madrid and all these great games and all these great finals. Was there more pressure on you to win games and win them comfortable?
No.
If you're playing for Real Madrid as opposed to anyone else? Because of the players
I think,
that you
had. I think there was on the team, but there wasn't necessarily on me, because I didn't understand the complexities. I knew what it meant for playing for Liverpool and winning games and having the pressures on me, because I understood what playing for Liverpool was, being born in the city. Whereas when I played for Madrid, a lot of the Spanish language and a lot of the newspapers, I didn't really take much from it, because I couldn't understand the papers. You know, I couldn't understand the language. I remember sitting, we just won the first Champions League and I'd only been at the club, what, 10 months? So the lads were in the dressing room singing Spanish songs and lifting the chairman up in the air, the president, which I did, but I just felt...
Did you just hum along to that?
I just felt as if I was a bit of a fraud. I did, because they're all singing the Spanish songs and I'm going, yeah. And I just thought to myself, this is just weird. And I got my phone and I took myself out of the dressing room and I went along the corridor and sat on the floor and listened to messages that you sent me, a lovely message about my mother and stuff, and I listened to it. But I wasn't in the dressing room sort of celebrating, because I just thought it was all a bit weird. And I remember thinking, I would have loved to have done this with Liverpool, because I would have been right in the forefront of it all and sort of knowing all the words and really throwing myself into it. And I was very much on the periphery of all the celebrations, just because I didn't understand it.
Why I'm bringing that up is because, you know, I talked before about when I won the league in Real Madrid, and that was just my first league title.
Congratulations again on that.
Thank you. But one of the first times I won at Old Trafford in a Real Madrid shirt was the game. Obviously, I'd went to see Macca the night before, and I'd phoned his room, and he spoke before about his roommate, it was Christian Caranbu. So I'd phoned a room, and I went to travel down. It was the Worsley Marriott you were staying in, so I travelled down from where I lived, go to the hotel, phones his room, no answer, phones it again, Christian Caranbu answers. And I went, where's Macca? He went, oh, he's in the bar. So, a little bit surprised. So I goes into the bar, and he's there with, I reckon, probably 95% of the Real Madrid were in there. And, I mean, pint of lager. This is the night before he played a quarter-finals. Yeah. I think it was Old Trafford, I think it was the quarter-finals. And he's having a pint, other players having a pint. Some are drinking the lattes or the coffees. And I'm thinking, wow, this is brilliant. You know, I said, what are you doing? He went, and he said, the manager lets us, as long as we're sensible, then, you know, you'll have one and then we'll go and have some food and then we'll go and sleep. So the next day, we put in this unbelievable performance, unbelievably good performance, and beat
United, mate.
Was that the game where Redondo done that skill?
Yeah, that was the famous one.
Had to pay to get back in, one of them ones. And I remember, obviously, you know, going home, being mesmerised how good we were that night. How good we were that night. So the next day I go into training, go back to Liverpool, and Gerard Houllier's talking to me. He says, hey, did you watch the game? And I couldn't wait to tell Gerard how brilliant it was for Real Madrid and how good they were. And I said to him the night before as well, I said, boss, the night before, I said, 95% of the players were all having a pint of lager.
Yeah.
And Gerard Houllier just turned around and goes, yes, but maybe that is why they're not doing so well in the league.
Brilliant.
I know, you know, it's one of them, you know, manager, because obviously
he sees
a problem with something. I mean, they were an incredible team and an incredible bunch of players. But seeing them the night before at this unbelievably big game, so relaxed and so comfortable, I knew they were going to win. Well, I knew we were going to win today.
We always met half an hour before, like dinner. And it was always, you can have a beer. In fact, they'd frown on you if you ask for a coffee, because of course coffee fills you up, and you shouldn't get filled up before your dinner, because that's where you get your good stuff. So they'd always have a beer, but in Spain, of course, when you ask for a beer, you just get a little one. And of course, they've gone into the Worsley Marriott and gone a beer, and they've been given these pints of lagers that they're all like shocked with. You know, some had a couple of glasses, a glass of wine or whatever, and some have these pints. And then he walks in, and of course these pints of lager are just everywhere. And he just thinks it's great, brilliant. But they were very relaxed. I always remember the night before the Champions League final. Some of them were having, you know, drinks and food and having a massage at like 1 o'clock in the morning and 2 o'clock in the morning, and the music's going in the hotel. You know, this wasn't the structure that I knew from England. You know, this thing, if you have to be in bed by this time, you have to have your doors closed at 10:30, you can't do this and you can't do that. I don't know whether in England we were trusted enough to be able to have a walk around and do what you do. But in Spain, the players, you know, they haven't got the same culture as we have in England. So I think that's why it was a lot different. But they were free to come and roam around the hotel and have friends there and come and see you. And, you know, there wasn't a curfew of you need to go to bed at this time. You could literally do what you wanted as long as you prepared for the game correctly, which they did. They were incredibly professional players. I wouldn't dare say they weren't. But it was a far more freer. They had far more trust in the players to, you know, do what you need to do, but just be ready for the game, and that was it.
For those people watching, majority of will have never played professional football, but at least they're all to score in a Champions League final, and to have that emotion with however many minutes to go. I'm going to score it, or I have scored in a Champions League final, and we're going to win it. Well, what is that moment like for a footballer?
You know, before you answer that, yeah. I mean, I won't take any credit with this one. I wasn't.
You can do.
No, are you playing for them then?
No, well, I've won in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
You know, I've won leagues.
Yeah.
But I'll let you have this. This is all about you.
Is it?
Yeah, this one.
Yeah, it was really good, because the first one we knew, I don't know when I scored, maybe 60-something minutes, I don't even know. And then Raul scored quickly afterwards to make it 3-0. But you knew from their body language that we were going to win. It was a Spanish opposition. We played them many times. We knew the players, a lot of the players personally. You knew what they were like. They had a really good team. And funny enough, they were favourites going into that game. But after 65, 70 minutes, we knew we'd done them. They were just out on the feet. They were shouting and screaming at each other. Raul went on a mad, crazy breakaway and scored the third, which, if you see the goal, is ridiculous. When you're only 2-0 up, it's ridiculous to score that type of goal. In that type of occasion, he ran 70 yards on his own, goes around the keeper and scores. So those goals should never happen in a normal game. And I think that was indicative of how they were at the time. So, you know, we were so comfortably ahead. So with 15 minutes to go, yeah, we'd effectively won the game. We'd have, you know, and everybody was not showboating, because that's the wrong type of word, but you could hear the crowd going, ole, ole, you know, and we were making chances at will, really. So you could really take it in. It was never a moment of, you know, oh my God, they might score and we might be struggling. It was, you really felt it while you were playing. You were smiling with your mates. You were dead easy with the ball in the end. The game became really comfortable. They weren't tackling anymore because they couldn't get near you. They were that spent. Yeah, it was really enjoyable feeling to just wait and look at the clock and just see the clock tick down until you knew that you were eventually going to win the game. where the last game we were hanging on, literally hanging on the second Champions League final, and it was such a relief that it was almost painful to wait for the whistle to go. But the first one was, yeah, glorious. Yeah, just taking the mickey out of everybody and just enjoying the game.
Obviously, you played for Liverpool against Everton in Merseyside derby. You played for Man City against Man United in a Manchester derby. And you played in a Clásico, obviously, Madrid and Barcelona. Talk us through that. What, comparisons or...?
Well, there isn't any comparisons, to be very honest. I mean, every derby match, I mean, even the Real Madrid-Atletico game, there's a certain rivalry to it. There's a certain animosity to it. Everybody hates each other for those particular moments. But the Real Madrid-Barcelona game is that times 10, that times 100, really. People hate each other. And it's not just because of football, it's because of politics, it's because of religion, it's because of independence of Catalonia. You know, they hate Madrid in itself rather than just the football team. And we were better than them at the time. They were not like our fiercest rival at the time. But they were always there or thereabouts, and they always had a good team and they were always trying to rebuild. So it was always one of real, real, real hatred. Very much unlike you'd see in England. And, you know, it goes actually unnoticed, really. You know, when we go to games, when we turn up in Barcelona, we'd have all the crowd outside the hotels, which was bad, and making noises and all that, which is fine, you don't mind that. I remember going to games and, you know, we were going that slowly. Police would be running at the side of your coach with shotguns, with guns, you know, with heavy artillery. They'd take you to a certain part where they'd have to let you go because you were coming into the stadium. And I never forget it. We got told to get into the middle of the bus, middle of the coach in the aisle, crouched down. Curtains were drawn, and once the police let us go, there was about a 50-yard, 100-yard section where we'd go across this road or whatever, and then under the stadium, and the things that just got hit against the sides of the coach and the windows would get smashed. And you'd feel the exhilaration, the adrenaline, because you'd be like, "You ready now, boys?" And you'd say, "Bah, bah, bah, bah." And then it'd stop, and it would abate a bit because we were under the stadium then. And then you're out ready to play them. You know, you're fired up then. So that was the start of, you know, the games that we used to play. And then, of course, you know, a year later after I joined, we bought their best player, one of their star men at the time. And then it just got worse. And then, you know, the vitriol and everything else and the whistles. And the objects that got thrown on the pitch with Luis, and games had to be suspended at times when we'd play them because it was just impossible to play games. I mean, it was actually quite disgusting, really. Whiskey bottles. Of course, the cochinero, the pig's head was thrown on, and that's the iconic picture. But this wasn't just the one game. This was a few games this happened, you know, over a number of years. And they got fined about like €20,000, whatever. But, you know, we had to get taken off the pitch at times. The games would be suspended while they cleared the pitch. But he took our corners, Luis, and in the end, he wasn't allowed to take them because it was too dangerous. Imagine that happening in a game. They said to him, "You cannot take the corners." Someone from Barcelona said to him, "You cannot take the corners, it's too dangerous."
Well, during a game. You've mentioned, obviously, with games and obviously travelling. What about the night before? Obviously, you did travel the night before.
Yeah,
to,
we'd just be in the hotel.
Hotels and any trouble?
Not really. We'd have that many police and security. You know, this was, you know, it wouldn't necessarily happen when we played for Liverpool. Then we'd go to these out-of-town hotels, whatever, in Sheffield or London or Waltham Abbey. You wouldn't have security outside or police. We'd have armed guards outside hotels when we'd go everywhere. They were that important. It was just a different mentality in Spain than it was in England. But we'd have this, and, you know, whiskey bottles getting thrown onto the pitch and mobile phones and golf balls and things were like that, were on the pitch getting cleared away. It was surreal. But they still hate each other now.
When Barcelona travelled to Madrid, was it the same from them?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, it wasn't as bad because, you know, for throwing things onto the pitch, it wasn't as bad, but it was still noisy and vociferous and, you know, things would be thrown against their coach, I presume. I mean, I don't know because I wasn't there, but I presume it was that type because once one is reported that that's happened in Barcelona, it's always like, right, well, we'll give them it when they come back to Madrid. But it was never a bad throwing things on the pitch and stuff, but I presume they when they arrived back in Madrid it was as hostile. I mean, we were better than them at the time, so it actually didn't matter that much because we were winning stuff every single year and they weren't. But it was bloody awful, and it's the same now, isn't it, really? You know, the political side, the Catalonia, the independence of Spain and the Madridistas, it's still You know, they still detest each other. You know, it's like that with everybody. Even if you dislike football, you hate Madrid.
Couple to finish with, Macca. One moment that you would go back to together, whether that be on or off the pitch. It'd be interesting if you've got the same or a different answer to this. What would it be and why? One moment you would go back to together.
You know what? I wouldn't have a moment. I'd have an era. So I think when, you know, obviously sitting there when I was playing my best football, I was playing with him, and I think the relationship we had on and off the pitch was probably why I played my better football. You know, I've talked about in the past about how, you know, some of my partners I've had in terms of strikers, but my relationship with him on the pitch, you know, when I was playing as well as, you know, as I've ever done, was down to him. And I said before how much I love him as a player. He was incredible to play with, and we had a great understanding. So I don't think it's any particular moment. I think it's certainly an era.
Greedy, that, isn't it? Going back to an era rather than a moment, but I'll
have
it.
Yeah, I mean, apart from when he won the league in Spain, it'd be around about that time. I always remember playing in those games, 96, 95, 6, 7, 8. I thought we had a great team. Great team. Didn't get the credit we deserved because, of course, you didn't lift a trophy or didn't get into the Champions League place. But I really enjoyed playing football at that time. I thought we had a great set of lads. They've been wrong many times by various things about thinking that they enjoyed themselves too much or took the too much. They didn't. At times, they may have enjoyed themselves, but it was always at the right. I'll always stick up for them and say they did it at the right times. We played a great brand of football. We were always expansive. We always wanted to score goals. We always wanted to play with a smile on your faces, which I think is important. I really do. Yeah, I thought they were really great, a real good set of lads to play with. And the fact that we weren't the champions of England every single year, you know, that's taken away from them. But actually, they were brilliant footballers. We just, unfortunately, we just couldn't get over the top on various years. But the camaraderie that we had is very different to the camaraderie that our teams have now, because, of course, it's filled with different types of players from all over the world, which is no bad thing. But the group of players we had at the time, I thought, was brilliant. We got on great. And, you know, they were the most enjoyable years that I ever played in.
I've got one particular moment. And I go back to when I was under 11s, he was under 14s, meeting each other for the first time, you know, on that crossing going from, you know, England to Holland. I think I'd have that moment again. You know
where it all started.
Because I'd love to do it all again.
Oh, I love that.
It's just very reminiscent. Again, all a little bit.
You all right?
Getting a bit emotional right at the end. You need to go on another half an hour, yeah. I think, while he wipes his eyes.
Macca, let's finish with how you would like to be remembered. By Liverpool fans.
Someone that hopefully entertained, that they enjoyed watching, possibly put a smile on the face. That's good enough for me, mate.
Listen, it's been great to spend time with you, Macca, and speak about your career and your special friendship with this fella as well. Thanks a lot, mate.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to today's show. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts and enjoyed it, we'd love it if you could leave a comment. A nice rating would go down well too. We'll be back with a brand new episode in 2 weeks. Until then, remember to follow We Are Liverpool on Apple, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can watch every episode on our official YouTube channel as well. Keep spreading the word. We'll see you next time.